internet. I'm Rick.
I'm Sam.
I'm Chris.
All right, and we are socially distancing podcasting, I guess, right?
Yeah.
So if we sound a little bit weird, it's because we're not in the same room. So I guess. So we have some topics that we want to talk about. We have a list to present to everybody. But before we get there, I think we have some news. Right, Sam?
Yeah.
Potential news.
Potential news.
Potential news. Rumors, if you will.
Yes. From several sources, there's a rumor that Michael Keaton will be reprising his role as Batman in a future Flash movie. They are in talks right now. So this is just rumor and speculation, but it is it's pretty exciting. I think that looks pretty promising. What do you guys think?
Well, if it happens the way I think it will happen, it will kind of be similar to, because it's a Flashpoint movie. So I think it's a way for DC to tie up their loose ends, you know, because they've got 14 different DC universes going on. But there's also talk that Henry Dean Morgan will play Batman, possibly Thomas Wayne Batman. Like they did in the comic with Thomas Wayne had taken a role over of Batman over when Bruce Wayne was killed in the alley. So you might get.
Do you think
Batman.
It's too soon? Do you think it's.
Oh, go ahead.
With guns. No, I was going to say, do you think it's kind of too soon for Flashpoint? I mean, I know people, you know, have watched the WB version of Flashpoint, and there's been the animated movie of Flashpoint. But I think if you're trying to do a solo Flash movie, I don't know if that's the right spot to start with. That's just like the X-Men doing the Dark Phoenix saga.
Right off the bat, yeah. It's kind of like the most popular, well-known Flash story.
You have to look at the fact that, you know, they're going for a bigger audience probably than the Berlantiverse or whatever it's called. And the people who already watch Flash are already sold on going to see a Flash movie. So if they're putting Michael Keaton back as Bruce Wayne, at least for part of the movie, you're selling a bunch of more tickets. The story has been done to death, but how many times have we watched Batman's parents get killed too?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I guess they could try to bring back like all the successful DC movies kind of in it and just kind of market it that way.
Yeah.
Technically they had already erased Michael Keaton's Batman universe from the in the Crisis of Infinity Earths crossover on the WB.
I didn't even realize he referenced that particular, because I thought I'll watch
it. Yeah, it was the reporter from the first Batman movie.
Yep. Oh, that's right. Yeah, okay.
So
I wonder if there will be any references to the Berlanti universe in this Flashpoint.
That would be interesting.
There's a reference to Ezra Miller by an appearance, so that
would be kind of cool if they did something like that. Yeah, maybe we'll bring back George Clooney as Batman.
And then have Deadpool just walk beside him and shoot him in the head.
Just immediately shoot him.
Sorry.
They're not getting my money unless there's bat nipples return.
That's right. That's right. The most popular Batman ever.
Yeah, exactly. So, also, you know, speaking of the bat nipples, just wanted to reference that Joel Schumacher, director of Batman Forever and Batman and Robin, he passed away.
Well, let's talk about his crowning achievement, The Lost Boys.
Lost Boys.
Lost Boys, yes.
I know a lot of people don't like Batman Forever's the Val Kilmer one, right?
That's correct. Yes.
That one did not bother me.
No, it didn't bother me. I like the soundtrack.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the Seal one, right?
Yes. That's Kiss from a Rose. U2's Hold Me, Through Me, Kiss Me, Kill Me.
That's right. That was a good song too. Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
So yeah,
that was a good soundtrack. Yeah.
Yeah. See? When soundtracks mattered.
that's true. That is true.
So
it's like that whole thing kind of started with the first Batman movie with Prince.
Yeah.
Because Bat Dance. I mean, come on, that was a hit.
I was still trying to understand that why, but yeah.
I mean, everybody was doing the bat dance. Come on, man.
Everybody was doing the bat dance. Even if you didn't know you were doing the bat dance, you were doing the bat dance. Right. Well.
But yeah, that's pretty exciting. I'd love to see Michael Keaton come back as some version of Batman.
Yeah.
That'd be kind of cool.
Or maybe.
Could segue into Batman Beyond.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
That
would be awesome. So yeah, so we have that looking forward. And one last thing that I wanted to bring up. There are rumors and reports that Beyonce may have a role in a future Black Panther movie.
Really?
Yes.
As what character, I wonder?
We don't know. So the people on the internet are thinking possibly Storm, but a lot of people are not in agreement with that. So I think that got debunked. But she may have some sort of involvement in the future of the new Black Panther movie in the near future. You want to hear my thoughts?
Yes. Share.
My thought is share. She is going to reprise her. That's not like share. My wish is she is going to reprise her role as Nala from The Lion King, and they're going to have a Disney Marvel crossover where Black Panther talks to Nala from The Lion King.
Oh man, that'll be like the ultimate crossover.
I'm pretty sure I hate you now, Sam.
Oh, it would be great.
Who could she possibly play, though?
Well, first they were. You know, people were suspecting that they might have her play Storm, which if that was the case, I would be booing. But yeah, I don't know who she would be playing if she is going to be playing a role. No, because Halle Berry didn't have the acting chops to play Storm. So
right. She's an Academy Award winner. No, I just don't think the part was written well for.
Yeah, just that, and you know, she got an Academy Award for being with Billy Bob Thornton, so I would give her an award too.
Well, we could.
Who would you pick as Storm then?
If we're talking about back in the night, I kind of like the young actress who was playing Storm in the two recent ones, I didn't have a problem with her. They just didn't give her much lines to say. Now, if we were talking about back in the 90s when the original came out, I was like on board with Angela Bassett because she she can have her character be very commanding, and Storm is a very commanding woman, but we can't have Angela Bassett because one, she's T'Challa's mother now in the MCU, and you know,
she's like 50 and you want Storm to be young.
She's 50, 58, yeah. Storm, we want Storm to be young. So yeah. Oh, you know what? Someone else. I'm trying to remember what that actress name is who also could play Storm. Just give me a minute. We'll swing back around to that. I do have an actress in mind. I just got to remember her name. I got to look it up here. But yeah. So that is the news that we have for everyone. The rumor mill. So.
All right. I guess we should get on with our main theme of this episode, and that would be in honor of Father's Day, right?
Yes.
The recent holiday that's just passed.
Yeah.
And we're all fathers, right? Yes. So we have some experience in this.
Yes.
So we're going to... Our list is going to comprise a list of the worst... Fictional fathers, right?
Yes.
Yes, I'm sorry I'm distracted because I'm looking at a list of people who could play Storm.
Oh, you know who it is? She is the actress who played in American God. That's who I was thinking of. I can't remember her name.
Oh, I know who you're talking about because of the American Gods series. I have her. I don't know her name, unfortunately. But yeah, she would be good. In that role, I think
it definitely is Yetide. I'm going to mispronounce her name because Yetide Badukai.
Yeah, I'm just going to let you mispronounce her name.
Yeah, I'm going to mispronounce her name. I'm going to attempt that. Yeah, but I think she would be a great Storm. So,
all right.
Yeah,
that is the actress.
I don't know half of the actresses that they listed. And I don't know why, if they put Zoe Kravitz on here and she was an X-Men First Class. So I just feel that they don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. All right. Well, I guess we should get on with our lists.
All right.
Who should go first?
But tradition holds that Sam goes first.
And what do we always say about tradition?
We're about nothing if not about tradition. I don't know. What do we always
That's
say?
That's right.
Okay.
Good. Like that. Tradition is the most important meal of the day.
Yeah. Okay. Tradition. The other way.
Tradition? Oh my goodness.
The road to hell. All right. Made with tradition.
We're starting first. Made with tradition. All right. So I'm gonna start from the bottom. Sorry about that. Something just went weird.
Uh-oh.
Okay.
I thought Max Headroom joined the chat.
The come rescue.
Right. I was like, what just happened here? All right. My number five dad that's just is. Dad that's bad. Is J Son. That's spelled capital J with apostrophe S O N. And whose father is that? That is Star-Lord, Peter Quill's father from the comics. So he is my number five bad dad. Like I said, his name is Emperor Jay Son. He is from, he's a species of the Spartonians. How he became Peter Quill's father was his ship had crashed onto Earth and he met Peter's mom, who is Meredith. They had a relationship as he was trying to repair his ship. He was forced to leave and to go back to his home world because a war was going on and never knew that Peter existed until later in life. Jason, when Peter meets him, he is the king of the Spartax planetary system. But finds out that his father is not a good person and not a just ruler. So Jason wants Peter to join to be the prince of Spartax. And, you know, Peter is refusing because A, his dad's not a good person, and B, he's with the Guardians of the Galaxy. So the Guardians and the Kingdom of Spartax go into like kind of battles, and they are constantly going at each other. So yeah, that is my number five. He's kind of he's so bad that he has teamed up at times with Thanos. Also, he's teamed up with Thanos' son, Thon, who is not as bad as Thanos, but, you know, at times he's not the best. So his other alias is Mr. Knife, which that happened after he was dethroned from his empire. So that's my number five. Bad dad is Jay Son.
Number five, bad dad, Jay Son.
I'll just tie into that. We can go with my number five. My number five is also Peter Quill's father, Ego, from the Marvel Cinematic Universe. First off, he goes around to various planets and produces offspring, but then tests them on whether or not they have power. And then, since none of them can handle it, they all get killed. He gave Star-Lord's mom brain cancer because she was a distraction. In general, he just, you know, wants to make himself every planet, right?
That's correct.
So,
and he impersonated David Hasselhoff.
Well, right.
Even bad dads have good qualities. But right. Yeah, that's mine's pretty straightforward.
Yeah, that's the we've all seen the movie, I think, and you know, it's hard to argue that he is not a bad dad.
Yes.
Yeah.
So bad dad. Okay. I guess that'll bring us to my number five, which I guess is kind of maybe a little bit of a controversial pick, maybe. Because most times when people think of James Gordon, Commissioner Jim Gordon, they think good things about him. You know, he helps Batman out, you know. He is the father of Barbara Gordon, who is also known as Batgirl, but somehow he also ended up raising a sociopath, which would be Batgirl's older brother, James Gordon Jr. And in general, he's not very good. He's a little bit, I guess people would call him insane. He is a genius level, so he's got that going for him. And some of the things his son has no empathy. He enjoys torturing and killing people, and he's committed like serial murders, kidnapping, stalking, various types of physical abuse to others. So yeah, in general, not a very good offspring of James Gordon. And I guess some would argue that, okay, maybe it's not his fault that he raised a sociopath, but I don't know. There's that whole nature versus nurture, concept. So I guess, maybe he could have done more to make his son not turn out to be a sociopath. I don't know.
Well, I mean, he is 50%. I mean, one is extreme psychopath, and the other one's a superhero. So
that's true. I guess the yin to the yang, right?
And why does it always fall under dads? Mom's got to have.
Yeah, there's probably some input from
some blame here.
Yeah, the matriarch of the Gordon family.
Give us something.
I don't know, man.
So
yeah, I guess that's about it. Yeah.
All right. So we're gonna move to number four.
Number four.
My number four bad dad is Dr. Jonas Venture Sr. from the Venture Brothers animated series. He is the father of Rusty Venture, who is Dr. Rusty Venture, or Thaddeus as his name, Venture, and the grandsons. I mean, the grandfather of Dean and Hank Venture. As you know, the Venture Brothers animated series comes on Cartoon Network's Adult Swim for a number of years. And we would get flashbacks of Jonas Venture's adventures, where he was a brilliant scientist and he was the leader of the Venture Team Force. But the thing that makes him a bad dad, here are some of the things that I feel that makes him a bad dad. He would constantly put his son Rusty in danger since he was a kid. So if you watch the Venture Brothers, you could see Rusty, Dr. Venture, always being paranoid and kind of being a little overprotective of his sons. Dean and Hank, well, because his father would take him on these crazy adventures and put his life in danger every single time and do experiments on him and basically would neglect Rusty while he goes on these different adventures. Also, he was very egotistical and very narcissistic. And also he would throw swinger parties in the complex of the Venture complex.
Oh, we're saying bad dad here though, right?
To much of his son's dismay, when his son was literally in the next room and having Dr. Venture just, got his groove on and was not much of a nurturing dad. Now, when his son was in danger, he would beat up the bad guys and stuff. But, that was about it. So So that is my number four, Dr. Jonas Venture Sr. He had another son too, Jonas Venture Jr., which had his kind of face, but a really, really small body. So, you know, there's that.
Yeah, I've not seen very much of the Venture Brothers at all. So while I hear it's awesome, I don't have any input on him.
Oh, it is awesome.
All right, then. My number four. I'm sorry, I'm looking at my list that I didn't put in order. Well, I'll just get him out of the way. I'm going to go with Thanos. Particularly the MCU Thanos. And the reason that I put him on the list is not because he snapped half of the existence out of being. It's because of the way he treated Nebula and the way he treated Gamora, pitting them against each other, making them worse, replacing pieces of Nebula as they were damaged off of her by her sister. It's just a bad thing to do. And then he just shows no empathy whatsoever for his children. That's really all I got to say about him. And he also, you know, snapped half of existence out of being.
Yeah, on top of all that. Yeah.
On top of all that. He had no idea that if his kids if Nebula would live through that. He didn't care.
Yeah.
Well, he did cry when he had to throw Gamora off off the cliff.
His favorite child. He threw her off of a cliff. Let's be real.
All right. Bad dad number four. Okay, so we'll go on to my bad dad number four, which would be Brock Williams from the Ash versus Evil Dead series. Brock Williams is the father of Ash Williams. And if anybody knows anything about any of the Evil Dead franchise or anything, they know anything about Ash. A little bit of an a-hole, I guess. A little obnoxious. He's got some good qualities to him, but he's also, you know, has a lot of bad qualities also. And I think his father basically has many of the same characteristics, and maybe and arguably is a little bit worse maybe than his son Ash. And so you can kind of see where he probably got a lot of the traits, where Ash got a lot of the traits from. He got them from his father, Brock. And then, you know, he was kind of, arguably quasi-racist, you know, towards Pablo. You know, and that's never a good trait. he called him, I think he called him an illegal a couple of times, made comments about it, whether or not he had his green card. I guess that's all I have to say about that. we'll end with the quasi-racist and we'll go from there. But portrayed by Lee Majors, which is awesome. TV's Fall Guy.
Yeah, you know, because he's the Fall Guy now, so he's quasi racist.
That's right. He always struck me as not the type to kiss and tell. It was weird.
All right.
Yeah.
So on to number three of bad dads. My number three bad dad comes from the world of Avatar, The Last Airbender, And that is that Fire Blue Lord.
Sorry, just kidding.
And that's why you have to say Avatar: The Last Airbender. You just can't say Avatar.
I wanted to hear the sound of you know, a thousand people screaming out in anger at me. Now I have. No!
Which is Fire Lord Uzza of the Fire Nation. Why is he a bad dad? Well, you know, he is his nation, his father and grandfather started the 100-year war between all of the lands, and he is continuing to be that dictator that is trying to take over the whole world by having his Fire Nation invade all the other nations, which is the Fire Nation basically wiped out almost all of the airbenders, meaning that's why the title is Avatar: The Last Airbender. His nation was responsible for that. He's also has waged wars against the Water Nation and the Earth Nation. And so he is basically the main bad guy of Avatar: The Last Airbender animated series. He's also scarred his son Zuka for life by a battle, and if you have ever looked up Zuka, you will see that one of his eyes are burnt due to battling his father in a duel. He's also banished Zuka's mother from ever coming back to the Fire Nation due to the fact that she tried to protect her son and spare his life when he was a baby. And because her father, Lord Ozu tried to kill Zuka when he was a baby. So in order to spare his life, his mother had to betray Lord Zuka, Lord Ozua, and basically she was banished. So he is not a good person. He has caused many of deaths around the Avatar world, and he's a terrible, terrible, terrible father. So that's my number three.
All right.
Yeah.
My number three is
Rebound. Yeah.
Jack
Bad Dad.
Torrance.
Number three.
From The Shining. Not just because he ran around and tried to kill his wife and son when they were alone in a hotel. That's bad enough. But before the movie ever started, he broke his son's arm. Presumably in a fit of rage. And if we're going the movie, it is heavily implied that he has been abusing him in other ways. And that's the nature of Danny's imaginary friends. There's lots of weird stuff in there that Kubrick put in there. But, in general, he's a pretty bad fictional dad.
I would tend to agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
I guess when you're trying to murder your own family, yeah, that's and bad dad territory right there.
took
that's Glee bad dad 101.
Yeah. Bad dad 101.
It is. Doesn't get much more basic than that.
That's right. Chapter one of the Bad Dad Manual of Bad Dadness. I don't know.
It's entitled Murder 'em.
Murder 'em. So, all right. I guess we'll move on to my number three, Bad Dad. I just previously mentioned Brock Williams, the father of Ash Williams. And my number three bad dad would be Ash Williams. I know. Whoa, it's crazy. But yeah, there's a little connection here. You know, I had previously mentioned that, you know, he has a lot of the same bad traits that his father had, Ash Williams does. And one of those things that he has that's also a trait of his father's is that he just wasn't a good dad. He had a daughter that he didn't even know he had until she was like a senior in high school. That's kind of bad.
Well, is that his fault?
It's maybe not necessarily his fault, but yeah, you know, it's you know, he could maybe done a little bit better there. Right? We're only assuming. We're making assumptions. You know, we don't know exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I don't hold that against him because I probably got like 30 floating around in high school.
And you know, quite frankly, maybe that's the best thing he could have done for her.
Yeah, right. That's the way I look at it.
Yeah.
Like, look, you exist. You're welcome.
Yeah.
You're welcome. So, yeah, I mean, that's pretty much all I have to say, I guess, about that. You know, we find out that, yeah, he has a daughter named Brandy Barr. And, yeah, she, you know, seems to be a little bit different than her father in some respects, but you know, that is probably because he wasn't there to influence her as much as he could have, I guess. But yeah, that's it.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, we are now at number two, the deuce.
The deuce. Lay your number two on us.
All right, my number two bad dad is Goku from Dragon Ball. More importantly, Dragon Ball Z and beyond. As you know, some of you don't know, Goku is the protagonist from Dragon Ball Z, Dragon Ball Super. He's a great fighter. Goku loves to fight. He is from the planet of Saiyans. His planet Vegeta. His species are Saiyans, which are space warriors. They love to fight and everything. And Goku, as a baby, his ship lands on Earth, and he is raised by a man who found him. His name is Gohan. And he is raised and he learns to fight and he loves to fight. And he gets married and has children. His first son is Gohan, which named after the man who found him. Well, the thing that makes Goku a bad dad is when Goku is fighting these warriors from different planets and stuff, especially he puts his son in these, takes his son on these adventures and puts his son in danger also. More specifically, during the Cell Saga, where an android named Cell is trying to destroy not only the Earth, but the entire universe. And Goku starts to fight him. And then Goku says, you know, Gohan, my 7 or 8 year old son, you can now fight this android who is hell bent on destroying the universe. And sends his son to fight this android who has every fighting style known to man in the universe, and constantly puts his family in danger, constantly puts the Earth in danger, neglects his wife from doing chores. I have no idea how this man even makes money because all he does is fight. Goku has really never had a job. And then when his wife gives him a job, like, you know, plowing the field to make crops. He haphazardly does it, and when something comes up, he just walks away from it. And he keeps dying. So, you know, he has died twice in his own series, which, you know, leaves Gohan and their youngest son, Goten, you know, alone with their mother, Chi-Chi. You know, and then he comes back and say, hey, I'm going to go fight some in some tournaments and save the world again. I'm going to go fight aliens. I'll see you guys later. Yeah. So, yeah, Goku's a great guy to defend the Earth from. I mean, the Earth as a defender of the Earth. But he's a terrible, terrible dad. He's just terrible. And that's my number two.
Your deuce.
I can't argue with you. On that, I don't think.
I mean, terrible. I could argue with you, but I've never seen it, so why would I argue?
I've just seen enough of Dragon Ball Z to know about the over 9,000.
That I know about that, and mm-hmm. I know that the first time that I saw it written down, I saw toys for it, and for probably years, I thought it was just Dragon Balls. I thought that, I didn't realize that.
Yeah. Dragon Balls, yeah, Dragon Balls.
Well, my deuce is a mythological deuce. It's Odin, and he goes on my worst father because for several reasons. In all the iterations, whether it be MCU or in the actual comics, he's a bad dad. So we'll talk about a little bit of both here. So let's talk about the fact that he locks his daughter up for fighting, you know, for being too good at the wars he put her in, basically. then we'll talk about the fact that he has two sons. One he clearly favors. And he pits them against each other to the point that it has repercussions for the entire universe, really. But definitely for the realms that they go between. And let's just as an example of his poor parenting skills, we're going to talk about when Thor met Beta Ray Bill for the first time. And Beta Ray Bill was able to pick up the hammer. And what does Great Dad Odin do? He decides to have the two of them. Since Beta Ray Bill is worthy of the picking up the hammer, he decides to have them battle to the death. The stranger alien and his son. Why would you take that chance? You know, it worked out. It worked out because Beta Ray Bill is, you know, a noble creature. Whatever, but nonetheless, death was on the line. So, Odin, you're a bad dad.
Bad dad.
Bad dad.
Bad dad.
All right. You think it was one of those? I'm going to act like you need to sacrifice my son. I just wanted to see whether or not you two would go through with it of killing each other. And then I'll say before the final blow, I'll say, oh, stop. You don't have to do that.
What happens if Thor wins? He just kills Beta Ray Bill. Like, is he going to stop him right. before the hammer hits his face or whatever? Like, you don't notice the killing blow until it kills. So,
right.
Yeah,
that's true.
Jackass.
Move, bring the hammer down.
Bring the hammer down. Yeah, I don't know. All right, I guess that'll bring us to my deuce. My bad dad here is, you know, let's just say this. You know, it's not easy being green. And I'm not referring to Kermit here. Yeah. I'm referring to Swamp Thing. Mm. Alec Holland. Bad Dad. And the reason why I say that is he has a daughter known as Teffy Holland. And Well, first off, I'll start with how she was conceived.
Okay.
Not the most traditional way. Okay. if you will. So she kind of, she got the name, you know, nickname of the Sprout. Okay. Because, you know, Swamp Thing is
a big green giant fan.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and then playing elemental and all that. But basically, how she was conceived, you know, because he's you know, swamp creature. He has a girlfriend or a significant other, if you will, and Abigail Arcane, or Abigail Holland, I guess, at that point in time, because, you know, technically kind of married. And they decided they wanted to have a baby. So how would they go about doing that? Well, Swamp Thing ends up possessing John Constantine.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And ends up having sex with Abby as being possessed as John Constantine, basically taking over his body.
Wait,
at the same time, Constantine has demon blood in his veins. So Teffy is also part demon.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, so she's got, you know, a little bit of hodgepodge-ness in there and things that are kind of making her into something a little bit more than what her father is. Her father's a plant elemental. She's kind of has the title as like an earth elemental. She was supposed to have a bunch of different powers above and beyond what her father had, but also kind of retain her human appearance. But, you know, there was lots of craziness going on with her as she was growing up. She ran away for a while. Abby kind of let her kind of try to have a normal life. And,
can I ask a question?
What's that?
Sorry.
Right.
I don't want to go back
questions.
To
yeah.
You got questions?
How did the Swamp Thing possess Constantine?
What's that?
How did the Swamp Thing possess Constantine?
And he kind of like his basically his, you know, he can travel into the green, if you will. Yeah. So he kind of, you know, he kind of did one of those things, and there was like some sort of magic ritual kind of business going on, and kind of yeah, I believe that Constantine agreed to it.
So, but
in the end,
yeah. But okay, so now hold on a second. Wouldn't that just make the child John Constantine's only?
Yeah, you would think that. Yeah,
genetically. Yeah. Okay.
Right.
Like he didn't implant like little seeds inside Constantine's scrotum or something, did he?
I mean, maybe. The comic never got that descriptive into the actual, you know, genetics of it.
You know, who wrote this series?
They kind of said that Swamp Thing possesses John Constantine, so he's basically has a human form and then is able to kind of go through and do the deed, if you will.
So is it like when Patrick Swayze possessed Whoopi Goldberg in Ghost and she turned into Patrick Swayze? Is that how this works?
I guess he kind of pulled a Patrick Swayze Ghost in this. You could go that route with it. Yeah. Yeah.
Who wrote that section of the comic? Do you know? Was it like
what's that?
Like this wasn't Alan Moore that wrote that part of it, was it?
No, this was Rick Veitch.
I think that's
how you pronounce his name. He I think he took over shortly after Alan Moore, though.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So, question.
Yes.
Sorry, so we're getting into the biology.
Because I'm trying to understand. So you're telling me that her mother, what's her name? Arcade.
Abby.
Abigail.
Yeah.
Abigail was aware that Swamp Thing was inside Constantine. And yes. She was okay with that. Got it. Okay. And so now their daughter have demon and the green inside her, right?
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
So, you know, would her Indian name be Firebush? I don't.
Maybe.
I'm just. I don't know. Talk about laying the lumber down. I'm telling you.
You put the, yeah. What?
Okay, so.
All right.
What so the what? First, let me just reiterate or recap here. So Swamp Thing goes into the green and somehow possesses John Constantine, who then.
Yes. Yeah. Basically, yeah.
Possibly willingly. Has.
Oh, no, it was. I'm pretty sure it was willingly, as I recall.
Okay.
It's been a little while since I read that storyline, but I do recall it was kind of like a deal that Swamp Thing kind of had made with Constantine.
So Constantine.
But actually, you know, here is a fun note, actually.
Okay.
That while Swamp Thing possessed John Constantine, Swamp Thing took John Constantine's possessed body to a tattoo parlor. And had a tree tattooed onto his ass.
He had like what?
A little tree on his butt.
I don't know. This.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is
a tree.
Yeah.
Getting like kind of petty tomorrow. Here.
Yeah. It was a little bit. Yeah. It was kind of like a little, you know.
Okay. So did Swamp Thing like then watch or. Like, what was going on here? Like,
what do you mean?
Like, he was Swamp Thing physically like seeing out John Constantine's eyes type deal?
Yeah.
He was Abigail like, aware of what was going on?
Oh, yeah. It was kind of a deal that they had kind of arranged because they both wanted to have an offspring. And it was the only way they could kind of, you know, conceive.
Okay.
Oh, okay. So, Constantine's like, okay, yeah, technically that's my daughter, but I'm going to give the daddy responsibilities to Swamp Thing.
Yeah. I mean, John Constantine pretty much kind of stepped away from the whole thing.
Where'd John Constantine go during this time?
Where'd he go? Yeah, he just kind of went and did his own stuff, I think. Oh, where was he while he was possessed?
Yeah.
I think essentially he was like kind of unconscious.
Was he unconscious or was he like a voyeur?
Yeah. This whole thing kind of transpires like in one issue.
So we're asking questions that there probably is no definitive answer.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry.
These questions that you guys have, they're questions you probably should have.
Well, my other question is that you acted as this was an unusual form of conception, yet it's all that I'm used to. So how is this unusual?
Well, I don't think you'd ever had a tree tattooed onto your ass, though.
Well, not a tree, but...
Wow.
Yeah. So that's something that happened in a comic book.
Yeah. Well, at least he didn't, you know, put the tree like a tramp stamp on Constantine. So, you know, I mean, it could have been worse.
That's true. It could have been worse. Yeah.
Could have been growing out of his crack.
But it's funny because like for several, I don't know, issues later or whatever, like, they like Constantine didn't even know that the tattoo was there, and then just randomly it'll show up in like an issue or something like that. So they'll refer back to it.
It's like, hey, look at you, buddy. Hey, buddy.
Oh, I know what that's from. So yeah.
Wow.
So yeah, bad dad, because you know. I don't know. There's a list of things, I think, right?
that's pretty.
I mean, it's different, yeah.
That is, yeah. Okay. All right. So now we are at the number one of our list of number bad one. Dads. All right. I'm going to go a little old school here. Oh, and my number one is Isaiah King from the comic book Stormwatch, from the comic book universe Wildstorm universe. His first appearance was in Stormwatch number 10. That's in 1994. His villain name is Deadspot. And his mental powers were he has telekinesis and he has telepathic abilities. His son is Jackson King, who is the leader of the superhero team called Stormwatch, if you guys remember those comic books. And basically what happened was Isaiah King was part of this superhero group called Team One. And as they were on a space station, a comet kind of went by their space station real close and gave most of the crew superhuman abilities. Well, as time went on, those abilities started driving those people who have the abilities mad. And Isaiah was one of them and basically almost destroyed the world. So they had to put him in a stasis pod and keep him locked away for a long period of time until he and his fellow villains, which were called the War Guards, were set free. They were basically set free as a last resort if the Earth was ever in so much trouble that they didn't care, that they were just going to destroy everything. And he basically almost destroyed the world again. And his son, Jackson, had to put him down and end him with the help of Spartan from the Wildcats comic book team franchise. So, trying to kill his sons and trying to kill several members of his son's superhero team. Yeah, he's not, and you know, he has the power of telekinesis and he's a telepath, so he can force people to do things like clean your room or, you know, kill a whole bunch of people, you know, create genocide. So, yeah, he's a bad dad.
I like how you compare those two things. Clean your room and genocide.
Yeah. I mean, that's right, the next logical step, right?
Right. Yeah. The slippery slope. Genocide. Start with cleaning the room. Next thing you know, genocide.
Yeah.
You know, genocide. What did I say? I said clean your room. You know, he doesn't. You know, because us dads, we have that voice of do what your mother said, or you know, clean your room. But you know, he got the You can't resist him unless you have the power of telekinesis and be a telepath to block his thoughts. And he was crazy. So that's my number one.
That's your number one.
Number one. Bad dad.
I came down to two choices for number one. One I think is a pretty obvious choice. And I don't really need to explain myself, would be to just say Darth Vader and get it over with, but everybody knows about him. And so I'm not going to talk about him. I'm going to talk about my least favorite father in cinematic history. Pa Kent. And not all Pa Kents. Kevin Costner.
Okay. Which one are we talking about? Costner, yes. Pa okay. Kent. Okay.
Okay. Okay. All right, so, okay. I'm going to tell you why he's my least favorite father. Not because he adopted an alien baby that fell in his cornfield. No, that's a fine quality. Keeping him hidden as a child. Yes, I understand that. Specifically telling your son that has the ability to change the course of human events to not get involved ever What is that? Then, to sacrifice yourself over a dog. I don't care if that dog is your best friend from childhood. You've got a weapon right next to you that could save him and survive the tornado. But no, like, you, whatever. A series of poor decisions causes Pa Ken to die in that movie rather than a heart attack. And then it's time for him to move on. Whatever. But those bad decisions caused me to think less of that movie as a whole. So Pa Kent gets the Bad Dad Award because he ruined a Superman movie for me.
I wholeheartedly agree with you. It's like in every.
my question is, you referred to his son as a weapon. I mean, would that really make him a bad dad? Like that he knew that people would see his son as a weapon, so that's why he wanted him to hide?
Well, what did he do to prevent it other than tell him, don't get involved? Like, rather than be the Pa Kent in everything else. Or in every other iteration you teach him that he needs to use his power responsibly for the betterment of humanity, that he was sent here, you know, as a gift to the world. And, you know, you teach him, you know, how to control his feelings and everything and be the Man of Steel. Instead, he taught him to be a D&D rogue hiding in the shadows that occasionally helps some people because he happens to be standing there. That's
right. And then
not a beacon of light.
And then just standing there, it's like, dude, you had several seconds to at least make a run for before that tornado hit you. You're just standing there.
And he specifically motions to him, no, don't come save me. You know, I'm
right. You didn't have a bum leg or nothing. You could have just ran.
I mean, that whole scene could have played out better if he didn't even utter those words. No, don't come save me. Like, if it, you know, I don't know.
It's literally the most unnecessary death that I've ever seen in a movie that I can think of. Like, literally. The thing that can save you. He runs as fast as the Flash. No one knows who he is.
right.
Second off, like it's not like they're all sitting around. Hey, Clark, how are you? They're watching the freaking tornado. He can run so fast that he would just disappear.
Exactly, yeah.
Or even, you know, run if he did like not use his super speed and got to his dad. And stuff. They can just hide in the car, and he can protect his dad while the car gets thrown somewhere. And it's kind of like we're just happy and blessed that we were spared by the tornado. Yeah.
How lucky were we?
Right? Yeah, right.
He could have grabbed a hold of his dad and protected him inside the tornado without the car. Like,
right. Right. There's just like so many other scenarios.
He could have run
tornado backwards.
What are the chances we landed in a mattress factory?
or just run back to the bridge because he had enough time.
The dog
made it.
Yeah. So
yeah, that scene is just so awkward.
I have other complaints about the movie, and we've talked about them, you know, but you remove that and I like it infinitely more. I'm willing to accept the fact that Superman, you know, killed 4 million people in a city with the Battle of Zod. I'm willing to accept, you know, and they dealt with that, you know, in Batman versus Superman heavy handedly and poorly, but at least they talked about it a little bit. I get angry just thinking about it. So that's my number one.
Yeah. And this is why I don't really have a whole lot of hope for the Snyder cut of Justice League.
Yeah, in fact, you know why?
That's my number one. I'm not gonna waste my
it's my number one because Pa Kent was pissed all over the movie Man of Steel.
There you go. Man. Damn, right. Yeah. Man. Yeah. I guess we could talk more about how bad Man of Steel is, but maybe I should just go into my number one.
Yeah.
Bad dad.
Because there will be on the list of bad dads talking about.
That's right. Yeah. My bad dad here is a interdimensional demon. You know, by that by itself, maybe not necessarily would make him a bad dad. I mean, most likely, probably, but you know. But yeah, he's an interdimensional demon, and he is the father of Teen Titans Raven. And his name is Trigon. So yeah, he's a bad dad. He you know, his goal is to bring all about all kinds of suffering, and he's trying to you know, just do bad things in general because he's trying to take over everything, and just he doesn't really care about anybody besides himself. You know, he doesn't even really care about Raven all that much, really. At least it doesn't seem like it. And yeah, just in general, he's a bad dad. Okay. I don't really have too much else to say about that, I think.
Well, I want to say one thing about him. Yes, yeah. He's an interdimensional demon, but he sires children all over the place against the like across the various dimensions and different worlds in an effort that one of them will take over for him, usually against the mother's will.
Right,
frequently the mother will kill the baby rather than have the thing grow up to be as evil as its father.
right.
So
I guess that's bad, right? I mean,
that's just a good sign that you're not the best of parents.
Yeah. So, yeah. That's it. That's our list of bad dads, I guess.
All right.
Yeah. Pretty thorough list, I think we presented.
Yeah, I think we can. You listen to this list, and you can discuss what are your bad dads of the universe, the different medias. So I think we covered some different medias and all the genres and everything.
Yeah,
this because it sounds like things are winding down and we're about to end this. This is a historic episode. It is the first episode that I can remember that we didn't go on a half hour tangent about something not directly related to what we were talking about.
Yeah, we pretty much stayed on target the entire time.
Like our tangent was specifically about the John Constantine conception. Like that was directly related to what you were talking about.
I should have saved that for number one because I was really kind of waiting to get to that one because I wasn't sure how much you guys knew about that whole.
I was still just kind of
trying to wrap and my still, mind around
one of my favorite comic book series.
I'm trying to wrap my head around it. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh man, that's.
That was my
talk
first
about grass stains. So that's just
right.
You have to shout out your sheets.
Right, exactly. Oh man.
Yes, they did. I recall when I was reading that comic too that they did practice, you know, it safely, if you will. They went and had John Constantine while they had him possessed. They went and had his blood tested to make sure he didn't have any kind of sexually transmitted diseases. I do remember something like that happening.
See, this is what I don't understand. It's like, why did he, if he agreed to this, why did he just get, like, swapped? He's like, hey, I need you to get tested, get a blood test.
I think it was something like that went down. Like, because I remember somehow they're chalking up the whole thing of the reason why he is pretty much disease free is because they chalked it up to him, his luck, that he always seems to be kind of having a certain amount of luck in the.
I just don't understand how possessing someone causes
magic.
There has to be like easier magic. This seems a very convoluted way to impregnate your wife if you are.
So Dr. Fate can turn him back human for like one night.
Yeah.
Okay, one night only.
That would have made it too easy though. That would have been like a, you know.
Yeah, I mean if anyone can make hard this wood, idea. It would be Swamp Thing.
This makes me feel as if Abigail was like, that John Constantine's always been kind of hot. I wonder how I could work this.
Yeah. Right. All right. I think this was Abigail's doing. She's like,
looks a lot like Sting. I don't know.
She's like, well, how can I convince my swamp partner to, you know, get Constantine involved in this?
Alec, I think we should have an open relationship. No, no way. And then she just goes and starts having a like brainstorming session of all the different ways. And this is what she comes up with.
If you possess.
What if you possess? Like,
and the best you could come up with. The best you could come up with is John Constantine. I mean, you have Superman, you got Aquaman, you got.
Well, let's be realistic. John Constantine is like Mr. the Terrific. One that would say yes.
Yeah. He's
going to be a. Like the conversation would go.
I don't know what Lowe's would say about this.
The conversation would be, John, hear me out and don't say anything before I get all the way through this. But I want you to sleep with my wife. Okay.
I'm in.
Right. Oh, man.
That was Swamp Thing. Volume 2, number 65. It came out in October 1987.
So that's literally... didn't Alan Moore leave for good in 64?
It was sometime around then.
I'm almost positive.
Yeah, it's something like that, yeah.
I'm almost positive. Maybe I'm wrong. Second series, Alan Moore. Moore's final issue,
64. Yep. So there you go.
So when did that one occur? Idea.
That's just been waiting.
65.
I just need that big bearded Brit out of the way.
Yeah.
Oh man, right after
Oh man. We're it's like you take this swamp character, you know.
Having believed something dead grew a sprout to replace him, unwilling to sacrifice an innocent life, he convinced them that he would take the sprout as his own child and eventually impregnated Abby, now his wife, with it by possessing John Constantine's body. This doesn't make any sense.
And yes, indeed.
Oh, man.
All right, then.
yeah, I guess we'll end on that. So, anything we want to add before we sign off here?
Yeah, I think Abby gets down with the get down. She's down for anything. Like, I'm in a relationship with a plant elemental. I'm having a three-way with a Brit. I mean, she's a keeper, I guess.
right. I mean, hey.
She's down with the get down. Oh, man, still. Your dad's crazy bad guy. I mean,
yeah.
But yeah. Besides that, well, you know, our Survivor tournament is still going on, so check that out. And all, you know, on our website at allofmyissues.com. You hear us on the Google Play and Apple Podcast. We listen to your favorite podcast at. That's where we located, on Facebook and Twitter. And
check out our website.
Com. Yeah.
So I guess that's about it then.
All right.
So thanks for listening. We'll catch you later.
See ya
later.
Bye.